before we get to any policy questions specifically, I'm interested, what do you think people care about in the 5th District?
I think people care about security in a lot of different senses of the word. I know people care about national security, keeping the country safe, making sure that the men and women who serve and the young men and women that agree to go off and serve have the resources they need. I know they care about us taking care of our veterans, and they care about the opioid crisis. They care about their health care security, their retirement security. So I think security is a big issue. They care about their children being secure at school. I think those are some of the really big issues.
Just last week, the U.S. Department of Justice announced almost $320 million to help different states with heroin and opioid abuse. And I know that you're on the health subcommittee in Congress. And so how much of a gap is there, do you think? Do you have a good sense for how much more is needed? Is it primarily a funding issue?
We actually, in the House and the Senate, have funded in the last couple of Congresses the opioid crisis to the tune of billions of dollars. And in fact, Indiana received $21 million in the last cycle of funding. They're receiving $27.8 million in this cycle of funding, and then $9 million. And so the resources are coming into the state, but different states have some different issues. And I'm really pleased that Governor Holcomb and the state have come up with strategies around the state, and it's going to be incumbent on the governor's office and the state to really allocate those resources. I'm afraid that we have a real challenge with treatment and recovery. We don't have enough different types of treatment and recovery, not just facilities, but providers, clinics, outpatient, inpatient. When someone is ready and or has been convinced they really need to go get that treatment, there still is far too long of a wait or a difficult time to find what's called a bed. And so that's something, but part of the problem is we don't actually have enough trained workforce to actually staff and run these types of facilities and clinics. So it's a difficult problem. Part of the funding we're actually putting on is focusing on the workforce needs of the treatment and recovery community. We're investing in, and I love this, we're investing in training for peer recovery coaches. I think we've talked about mm-hmm. this before in the past. Mm-hmm. Allowing and training those who are in recovery themselves to be trained coaches to help other people with addictions through the very difficult recovery process. But that takes funding also to provide that training and provide those certifications. I think that is an incredible model in many ways led by Eskenazi Health and Project Point. But we need those all across the state. It's unclear to me how much money is needed, but I think we're going to need to continue to stay focused on this until we see a dramatic change in the numbers. We're not seeing that yet. We haven't turned the corner yet.
Your opponent, Dee Thornton, is a proponent of gradually moving towards Medicare for all. And I'm curious, do you think that there's a middle ground on this issue as kind of more people on the left are pushing for free health care?
Well, there is nothing. Free health care is never free. It has to be paid for and paid for by the taxpayers. I do believe and want to ensure there's affordable, accessible health care for all. But that's where I believe more in the free market and in competitors and in providers competing to try to help lower the cost of health care. The Affordable Care Act never accomplished that. It never turned that cost curve to bring health prices down and lower. So many people are still seeing their premiums going up. employers who are still, you know, trying and working hard to provide employer-sponsored health care are still fighting and seeing, you know, increases in their premiums. People are still buying those plans with high deductibles because that's all they can afford. So the system is not working. And so while I want to try to find all of those options, and I do believe there are definitely a lot of options we need to explore, like associations or small employers pooling together and providing options, like opening up, you know, affordable insurance across state lines and being able to buy. And that's difficult. But I think there are a lot of things we could be doing. But I think Medicare for all is not the way to go.
Last time you were here, I think it was last time you were here, we talked about immigration and we talked about what was happening on the border. You had visited semi-recently. You know, obviously media coverage of that has kind of petered out and a lot of people are talking about a lot of other things at this point. What do you think, now that we're, you know, months away from it, how that all resolved or did it not resolve? Are you happy with it?
Well, I visited the border in July, you know, shortly after the separation of families at the border had begun to happen, to see what was happening. And I was not in favor of that policy. And in fact, I voted on some immigration reform proposals in Congress since then, both that failed, that would have prohibited separating families at the border. You're right in that there isn't as much focus right now on the immigration crisis, but there is still a crisis at the border. Not necessarily no longer families being separated, but I think we talked about we still have massive numbers of unaccompanied children coming to the border, a huge number. The numbers, I think, through June were we had had 18,000 children without parents coming to the border. That's something that we're not talking enough about in this country because we are taking those children in. They're primarily from Guatemala, El Salvador, and on to Honduras, being brought up by traffickers and smugglers. And we are taking them in and we are caring for them, finding their families here or being put in foster care or other facilities. But it's a very broken system. And I voted on bills that would have stopped that, but also would have resolved the issues with the DACA young people, the deferred action young people. And I still believe we need to focus on that. And it's very possible, as I understand, you know, the Supreme Court is hearing cases on that now. But we've got to find a way forward for the deferred action young people. They were brought here by no fault of their own, by their parents. Yes, their parents illegally immigrated here, but these children were small, young children, or maybe even in middle school and high school. But they came here with adults, and they have become part of the fabric of our society. And quite frankly, we need them in the workforce. We have a workforce shortage in this country. We have a significant workforce shortage, particularly in Indiana. And I've met many of these young people who I think contribute greatly in their communities and schools and can in the future. So we've got to get this figured out. And I'm committed to trying to resolve these issues, which includes border security, changing some of the laws, but also includes finding a way forward for the DACA young people.
And you mentioned there are a couple of bills that died recently. I mean, yes. Are you worried that momentum has kind of been lost in Congress on the issue?
I think a bit, until either after the election or until courts come down with decisions that cause us to act. And obviously, courts interpret laws and interpret actions by the executive branch and so forth. But it's up to Congress to fix the immigration laws. It's actually not up to the executive branch. It's up to us. And I've been very disappointed that bills have failed and that we have been unable in the 6 years I've been there to resolve. It's probably the thorniest issue and one of the most complex issues, because while we might, say, reach agreement on visas involving high-tech workers or fix the agricultural worker issue because we know we need that workforce, so many things get put into comprehensive bills that we cannot seem to find a path forward and get a majority to pass a bill, even within my own conference. So this has been an incredibly difficult issue. I'm committed to working on it and want to stay focused on it.
So that actually goes perfectly into another question I have, which is, you know, a talking point for years now, and especially in the last couple of years, has been that everything is getting more polarized. People on each side hate each other. They won't talk to each other. There seem to be some people that are responding to that by saying that it's sort of a good thing, that we need to not compromise so that we can push the legislation that we need. Where do you fall on that spectrum? Like, how much do you value middle ground and collaborating with people on the other side?
The philosophy of my office and my team has always been to try to find the middle ground. And that's why there are so many issues with the Affordable Care Act. It was pushed through completely with one side rather than both sides collaborating and working on it together. But I will say, and I'm very proud to have the highest bipartisan rating in the Indiana House, in the delegation that represents Indiana. All of the legislation that I propose that is significant legislation has always had a bipartisan partner. A law enforcement mental health bill that I got passed to try to ensure there are more mental health resources for law enforcement officers, partnered with Val Demings, a former police chief from Orlando, protecting our young athletes from sexual abuse based on the horrific acts of Dr. Nassar. I partner with Lois Frankel, a Democrat from Florida, and it was actually Senator Collins and Senator Feinstein that carried that in the Senate. So, and that's to make sure that our young athletes, there are far better protocols in place and reporting in place for those young athletes, Olympic athletes and others. So it's always better to partner. I partnered with Congressman Carson on the Kennedy King, ensuring that that is a historic site in the future and part of the Civil Rights Network. So I think it's critically important to partner. I think that's the best legislation. It also ensures when you have a partner in the House that there will be bipartisan partners over in the Senate. And that's, I think, the best way forward. That's what I hope that we can move toward, whether it's with healthcare solutions, whether it's got to be with immigration, it's got to be we come together, for instance, when it has to do with our veterans often. We came together in the opioid crisis. The big package we just passed was a huge bipartisan package, and it shows me it can be done. It really can be done, and I'm not just an optimist. I'm a practical realist in getting it done, and I believe in that.
That's all I had. Anything else you want to say?
No, really pleased to be here. You know, look forward to you know, taking our ideas and our track record and to the voters come November 6th.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.